So this week is Parshat Vayikra and Parshat Zachor. So I know that all of you were guessing that I would speak about Zachor. But no. We will talk about Vayikra. In the first couple prakim, it speaks predictably about Korbanot. I say predictably, especially after you know it. And I'm not going into right now which Korbanot, which is first and second and third, and perhaps the sequence is important. With Korbanot, you always need to pay attention which kinds of animals are being brought, big animals, small animals, tzon, right, or others, birds, when it can be grain. With Korbanot, you need to pay attention to when it's a male animal and when it's a female animal, and when you start paying attention to all those things, then it may begin to make sense, but we're not looking to make any sense today. In Perek Hay, we have something which I think is a bit of a diversion, or diversion maybe not be the right word. We move a little bit laterally from what we had been speaking about too now, and it's specifically this movement that I want to pay attention to. V'nefesh ki techta v'shama kol ala v'hu eid o ra'a o yada o lo yagid v'nasa avono. So over here, it's talking about somebody who knows about a witness. It's a witness who knows about something and does not speak. So over here the problem is the silence. Does not speak, he's going to bear his sin. O nefesh asher tiga b'chol davar tamei, or somebody who touched something which was tamei, o b'nevlat chaya tamei, o b'nevlat behema tamei, o b'nevlat sheretz tamei, b'ne'elam mimenu v'hu tamei v'ashem. So what's interesting over here is simply the movement. I mean, the first verse speaks about something where primarily the sin is not a sin against God, it's a sin against others. And that's, by the way, what's interesting here, is that I may well have thought that this whole concept of the Mishkan would have dealt with a relationship with God, but over here we find a relationship with somebody else, and it's not even something which I did actively, but something which was not done. I repressed testimony, which I had. And then immediately in the next verse, it moves over and it sort of compares it, and I say sort of compares it, because it's just, you know, the same topic, and it talks about somebody who came in contact with a nevela or so on. And that's really interesting, because the nevela is something within the world of Tuman Tahara, and the world of the Mishkan is a world of Tuman Tahara. So who would have suspected that within this world of Tuman Tahara, we suddenly have this, I'd even say, caring about, although that's probably a little bit too strong, but dealing with interpersonal relations. And as I said, that's something which really strikes me and I think is interesting. But this back and forth is actually going to be more noticeable when we look at some of the language which is used. One of the words which I didn't bother translating in Pasuk Bet is that a person comes in contact with Tum'ah, v'ne'elam mimenu. So here talking about a person who came up with a Tum'ah and they were unaware right now. V'ne'elam, it's something which became secret. The next verse is, Pasuk Dalet, O nefesh ki tishava levatei bisfatayim, lohora ulehitev, l'chol l'shivta adam bishvua v'ne'elam mimenu. So you'll notice, I hope, with my bolding and emphasis on those two words. See, we just now went back to speech. So what was interesting is that the first verse was when you don't use your speech, when you should use your speech, because your speech can actually help somebody, and you have repressed it. On the other hand, in the second verse, we're talking about actually becoming in contact with something which is tamei, but that tum'ah may have become hidden from you. And then we go back in Pasuk Dalet to somebody who makes a vow, a shvu'ah, and this person says they either will or they won't, good or bad, positive, negative, v'ne'elam mimenu, in the same language is used again, and this becomes hidden from them. So over here, it's not just a question of sort of moving laterally from one topic to the other. It sort of seems to us like there is not just an interplay, but some kind of an interrelationship over here. And that, again, is something which I don't think we necessarily would have expected. as we continue, and we'll move down to Pasuk Tetvav. Nefesh ki tim'al ma'al, a person, although I do want to note, nefesh ki tim'al. Nefesh ki tim'al, how would you translate that? Would you literally want to say a soul or a person or... But the word nefesh, because it easily could have said Adam, it easily could have used a different phrase. And I'll point out that, again, back in that first verse, the way that it was put together, the way that it was phrased, was nefesh ki techata. When, again, is it a soul? Nefesh ki techata. And over here is nefesh ki tim'ol. So nefesh ki tim'ol ma'al. So over here we have something which is called mi'ila, and we will have to understand better what mi'ila is. I would even be tempted to say mi'ila is something which belongs to above. To above, al, mi'al. It's something which belongs above. Now, it could be that this is purely my imagination, but none of you have a better definition, do you? As I thought. V'nefesh ki tim'al ma'al v'chat'a bishkaga mikodshei Hashem. Again, a person or soul, if you will, who was guilty of mi'ila, who took something which belonged to heaven, mi'al, from heaven, took something which belonged to heaven, v'chat'a, and then sinned. Chet, at least as far as the rabbis are concerned, generally is an indication of something which is done accidentally. Chet is something generally which is an accident, something which is missed. It's used, the word is used in other points, when somebody missed a target. You're shooting a bow and arrow and you miss the target, then you could say lachti et matara. So it doesn't have the same connotation as a deliberate sin or a rebellious sin. And there is this chet, there's avon, and there's pesha. So
pesha are intentional?
Yes. Chet, avon, and pesha. Pesha would be rebellion, would be lahachis. The person is a poshea. Avon would be you did something on purpose, but it could well be that it was simply your yetzer hara got the best of you. So over here, it's nefesh ki tam'al ma'al v'chata'a bishkaga mikodshei Hashem. A person who accidentally took something which belongs to heaven, something which is holy, something which should be separate, something which belongs to heaven. And over here, the law of mi'ilah is not a law when you deliberately steal something from the Beit HaMikdash or from the Mishkan or something which is holy. The law of mi'ilah is when you accidentally took something from what would be considered holy. V'heviyat ashamo l'Hashem, which is interesting because we now sort of moved chata'a bishkaga, but ashamo l'Hashem. And we'll go back to exactly what it is they asked to bring. And on top of everything else, there's going to be a fine, which will be the chamishato, yosif alav. You have to pay back with interest what you took from kodshim. A little bit further down, in pasuk kaf, v'yidber Hashem Moshe lemor, kaf aleph, nefesh ki tachata, uma'alal ma'al v'Hashem. So now notice that in Tedvav it was nefesh ki tam'al ma'al v'chata'a, and here it's nefesh ki chata'a umalam ma'al v'Hashem. So the construction of the verse is different. Now if you're just going to tell me that there's an angel up there who advises God, as absurd as that is, and says, listen, you can't just keep using the same sentence structure. You got to keep this interesting. This is Vayikra, it's bad enough as it is. So let's at least make things interesting and mix it up. So you all realize that's absolutely absurd, correct? And the fact that there's a different construction should be something which we just have to note, but I'm going to say it again. Pasuk Aleph was Nefesh ki techta. In Pasuk Tetvav, it was Nefesh ki tamal. In Pasuk of Aleph, it was Nefesh ki techta uma'ala ma'al b'Hashem. Back to Tetvav, it was Nefesh ki tim'al ma'al v'chata'a bishkaga. So therefore, the various constructions over here actually seem a little bit more important. But let's go back and now read the content of Kaf Aleph. Nefesh ki techata Uma'ala ma'al ba'ashem. So that's really interesting, because I took something from God. Now, what is it that, what's the mi'ilah that I took from God? Now, I know previously, you know, we already, again, just to review, we've guessed that the word mi'ilah means something belonging to the above, something belonging to Al, something belonging to heaven. So therefore, that was confirmed in Tetvav, Nefesh Kitim Alma Al V'chata B'shka Mikod Shei Hashem. So therefore, you took something which belonged to heaven and therefore was holy, and therefore that's Mi'ilah. Nonetheless, in Pasuk Kaf Aleph, Nefesh Kitachata Uma'ala Ma'al B'Hashem V'kichesh Ba'amito B'pikadon U'B'tzumat Yad U'B'gazol O'shak Amito U'matza Avida V'kichesh Ba'v'nishba Al Shaker. Allah mikola she adam lachto bahina. What was the common denominator of all of the cases that just now laid out? It all had to do with financial sins, and the financial sins where a person steals something. Although, what is really the common denominator over here? One was kichesh ba'amito ba'pikadon. Somebody gave you collateral, and you totally deny that that is their collateral sitting in your driveway. What are you talking about? That's my car. It's not your car. That's not collateral. So theft or attempted theft just now took place. How did the theft take place? It took place by your denying it. If you continue, you have tesumet yad, o begazel, o ashak et amito, o matza avida v'kicheshba, or a case where you found something and somebody, did you find my wallet? And you just shake your head. Don't know what you're talking about. V'nishba al shaker. Halacha mikola she'es adam lachto mehina. All of these cases, which is essentially cases where people use their words to steal, their words to deny, their words to take something which isn't theirs. And what's really interesting was the opening part of this verse, because it called it nefesh ki techata uma'ala ma'al ba'ashem. Just in case you're totally convinced, as I am, that we're not going to get to the end of the sources today, I do want to just take a very quick detour. This is just to point out, this is not going to be an in-depth conversation. In source 11, we have the sin that Moshe and Aaron do, which eventually is either the straw that breaks the proverbial camel's back, or is the worst thing that they do, because, which is actually sounds preposterous, because in Aaron's resume, we have the sin of the golden calf, and over here, this is the sin of hitting the rock, or if that's the sin. See, I was afraid to say that. V'yomor Shem al Moshe v'al Aaron, yan lo himantam bi lahaktisheni. He didn't cause there to be k'tusha. What do they actually do? God said, take the stick and speak to the rock. So Moshe goes and takes the stick and hits the rock, and he says not nice things to Am Yisrael, and Aaron actually doesn't say anything. So we're always mystified as far as what is it that Aaron did, because he didn't do anything. Now over here, what it says is, what you did is you did not create Kedusha. And therefore, l'chein lo tavi et kal hazeh el ha'aretz asher natati lahem, therefore you're not going to lead them into the land of Israel. You've lost your leadership position, and this is Me'emriva. When Moshe tells over the story again in Sefer Devarim, it says in source 12, "Deber Shem Moshe be'etzma yom hazeh lemor." Actually, it's even better. God says to Moshe, not just Moshe telling the story. This is the end of Devarim. God speaks and says, "Alei el har avarim hazeh, har nevo asher be'eretz Moav asher al pnei yirecho urei etz eretz kanan shenatein levnei Yisrael la'achuza umut behar asher ata ole shama ve'yasef alamecha." I hope you all appreciate why we're reading that today. Because today is Ayin Adar, Bet, correct? Somehow my father's had three birthdays this year. It is my father's birthday is Ayin Adar. And somehow it was a birthday in February, and then it was a birthday in Adar Aleph, and now it's in Adar Bet. And we're machmir for all, Baruch Hashem, we're machmir for all of the birthdays. I don't know how old he is now, having three birthdays in the last month, but Baruch Hashem. But then Pasuk Nun Aleph leads the word that we're looking for. Why is it that you are not going to continue? Al asher me'altem bi, b'toch b'nei Yisrael, b'mei mirivat kodesh, kadesh, midbartzin, al asher lo kidashtem oti b'toch b'nei Yisrael, that you were guilty of me'ila. So I will point out something that we could only have pointed out when we go and start trying to consider where me'ila is used in various cases, and there's still two more cases that we need to look at. But at least this case with Moshe, was the me'ila that he took the honor and it made it look like he was the one who performed that miracle instead of God, and that's because you did not create Kedusha. Of course, the problem is what Aaron did. Aaron was silent. But it's interesting in terms of me'ila being used over here in this case to describe somebody who took something which isn't theirs, and that's the me'ila itself. And we really were mystified back in Pasuk Kaf Aleph, Nefesh ki techata uma'al ma'ala ma'al b'Hashem, v'ki chesh ba'amito. What in the world does the first clause have to do with the second clause? Why is that me'ila l'Hashem when you're taking something which belongs to somebody else? Which means that the flow just doesn't seem to really follow over here. So I am pointing out that the word me'ila is used over here as well with Moshe, and I'm pretty convinced we can take it in different ways if we tried. Is it misusing speech? Is it taking something which isn't yours by speech, as we just now saw now? Or is it because you did not create the Kedusha, and therefore you prevented there being Kedusha in the world by not bringing God into the world at this point, and therefore what you've done is in a sense like taking from the Mishkan or taking from the Beit HaMikdash. But I'm just pointing out again that with this other application of Me'ila, we now realize that maybe there was another way that we could have nuanced it. Source 14 we're not going to look at, but this is when the tribes who live on the other side of the Jordan, when they come after the various battles which they agreed to do, and then they go back to their land, and they come to this realization that they are not going to be able to serve God in the Beit HaMikdash or in the Mishkan or eventual Beit HaMikdash living on the other side of the Jordan. Again, I'll repeat, the other side of the Jordan may have the law of Eretz Yisrael regarding various things, but at least the Mishnah in Bikurim tells us it does not have the status of Eretz Zvat Chalav Udvash. That's never described that way, and therefore they don't bring Bikurim. They can't bring Bikurim from there because Bikurim is connected to Eretz Zvat Chalav and Udvash. Yes, you get to pay Israeli taxes, and there are certain laws of Terumot and Masrot and so on which will apply, but not Bikurim because it's not Eretz Zvat Chalav Udvash, which I think is a really interesting definition. But part of the problem then, of course, is that they are now going to feel very isolated, but not so much so from the other tribes that they, I think, bought into from the very beginning, but isolated from service of God. And they decided it would be a wonderful idea to build their own Mizbeach. And at that point, look at Ted Zion. We'll look at Ted Vayavoel b'nei Reuven v'nei Bad v'chatzi Shevet Menashe, right in source 14. Eleretz Galad v'diburi tamlimor koam ru kol adat Hashem ma hama'ala ze shema'altem b'lokei Yisrael l'shuva yom me'acharei Hashem b'vnotchem l'chem mizbeach l'mordchem hayom ba'Hashem. That by building your own mizbeach, you're guilty of mi'ila as well. But and again, you would not have immediately used the word mi'ila in this context, because you would have thought mi'ila is when you take something which is holy and you use it for yourself. And over here is trying to create a false mizbeach. That is what the mi'ila is over here. And again, I'm going to say that's an interesting usage of the term. The other places that we perhaps need to pay attention to are, and this should be very easy for you all to remember now, there's two examples of Me'ila in Vayikra Perakeh, and there's two examples of Me'ila in Bamidbar Perakeh. So now all you have to remember is Perakeh. And then remember, what was it about Perakeh I was supposed to remember? But in source number two, Ve'deber Hashem el Shelemor, deber el b'nei Yisrael, isha u'isha, ki yaseh mikol chatat ha'adam. And now hopefully you're a little bit more sensitive to it's not nefesh, it's isha or isha. Ki yasu mikol chatat adam, lim'ol ma'al b'Hashem. And what is this type of me'ila? V'shema nefesh ahi, v'dvadu et chatatam asher asu, v'shivet ha'shemo b'rosh v'chamishto yosef alav, v'netan lehem asham lo. So over here, it's taking something which is holy, it's pickpocketing from the Mishkan, accidentally taking something home, taking a souvenir from the Mishkan, and that would be considered to be me'ila. You're taking something which is holy. This would be the classic me'ila.
What's interesting is a couple verses later, not all that far, and close enough that you cannot disassociate these two episodes. Continue with the same source, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayedaber Hashem Moshe le'emor, Daber b'nei Yisrael, v'amarta le'em, ish ish ki tisteh ishto u'ma'ala bo ma'al, v'shechav ish ota shechva zera, v'ne'elam mine isha. By the way, we had our ne'elam back in the other couple of cases over here. V'nistara v'hi nitma'a, which, by the way, was there also cases of tum'ah. V'eid ein ba v'hi lo nitpasa, and so on, which, of course, is the parsha of sota. And therefore, the man who decides it would be a wonderful idea for him to bed somebody else's wife should realize that this is a case of me'ilah as well, that they're taking something which is holy, something which... Now, again, I could just say, it's taking something which isn't yours, it's a misappropriation, but I'll stress the word kedusha. When someone gets married, they get kedushin. And therefore, the concept of me'ilah being juxtaposed in two cases. One is you took something from the Mishkan, and something you took something which had kedushin. You're saying, this is the same thing. And it goes back to my point that I started with today. I could have thought that the whole world of korbanot is a world that really deals only between man and God, and there's very little man-to-man relationships over here. So it's interesting to see the man-to-man issues being mentioned, or interpersonal would probably be more politically correct today rather than man-to-man, that the interpersonal issues being mentioned over here are interesting, but it's also interesting to see how the concept of mi'ilah is being applied in various cases. And these are not accidental usages. These are all usages that we really, again, need to pay attention to because they're deliberate. And they're deliberate, again, whether it's God telling Moshe what went wrong by hitting the rock or by not speaking what he should have said or whatever it is took place in that case. It's me'ilah, and we still don't know why it's me'ilah to Hashem, when you deny that you've taken something or you found something which belongs to somebody else. You don't know why that case is me'ilah, but we're not talking about Moshe now. That's too easy. So we're not talking about that. That we have done and we'll do b'li neder. What's the matter? So the word me'ilah could be an important word to know to understand what we're doing today. The word me'ilah is a misappropriation. The word me'ilah as misappropriation could be used in modern Hebrew where you'll see a white-collar crime being committed. You'll say, oh, the CEO, or even better, the accountant for this corporation was guilty of me'ilah, that he misappropriated funds and he put them in his own bank account. So that would be used in modern Hebrew. I suggested earlier that, and we'll see hopefully soon some commentaries, I suggested earlier that the prototypical me'ilah is when you've taken something that belongs to God. You've taken something which is holy, and now you've used it for your own personal use. And therefore I suggested that perhaps the word me'ilah would even mean mi'al, something which belongs to the above, something which belongs to heaven, and now you're taking it for yourself. So that I'm saying again would be, I think, the prototypical use, even though we're saying it's being used in other ways over here, which the question, of course, is, are those independent, not connected at all, which I think is very difficult, which means the real advantage over here is that we have two double usages. We have double usages in Vayikra Perikei, which we're really considering, which included denying that you found somebody's wallet, which is being said, that's Mi'ilah LaHashem. Why is that Mi'ilah LaHashem? Again, I don't know if you've noticed, but I keep coming back to that question. And on the other hand, we find the Mi'ilah is that you took something from the Mishkan. Now, that's not that somebody along the way, I'm going to say it again, sort of forgot how it was used in the other case, because they're right next to one another. So therefore, again, using the example of taking something from the Mishkan in Bamidbar Perikei, and immediately afterwards describing when somebody is suspected of sleeping with somebody else's spouse, you're saying, hold it, that's also a case of Me'ilah. That's not an accidental usage disassociated from the former use. Again, they're both written right next to one another in the same context, which they, again then suggests that there is something much deeper to understand over here, and of course that's what we're trying to do. So I agree with you. Not understanding Me'ilah would be actually very difficult to understand everything else I'm saying today. Yes. Yes. How did this get to capitalism? Perhaps, but perhaps, but I just don't understand how you socialists, not yet. I don't know if I ever told this, I probably did. This summer we were in a certain place, which is a very wealthy community, and Friday night, Everybody was around the table, and we're again, extremely wealthy community. And everyone was Republican, and everyone was pro-Trump and so on, except for one person, and that was the rabbi. And the rabbi was a Democrat, and he was giving them a hard time, and somebody turned to me and said, what are you going to do with the rabbi? I said, it's easy. Give him a raise. I said, easy as that. Give him a raise. He'll change his politics. It's simple. They laughed, but they, no. Yeah. No. No. Again, which case are we talking about? But Mi'ilan, the classic case is you took something, you have to return it, and you have to pay a fine on top of that. Good, but you wouldn't have said that before we started the class.
No, I had no idea.
So give me a little bit, and I'm going to clearly try to go there. Yeah.
No, it's not only that.
It's not only that. So that's very good. Look, one of the things that I was tempted to say, and I didn't see anybody actually say it, at least not clearly, maybe somebody hinted at it, is maybe part of the problem is misuse of speech, which means speech itself is something which is really divine. And God gave us, right, this goes back to Onkelos in the very beginning of the Torah, that God gave man this divine or this spark within us, and that's the Ruach Melalala, the ability to speak. And God speaks throughout creation. I brought you coffee, dear. But you're busy? Okay. You'd rather have chocolate?
No, I'd rather
not. Okay. Maybe after class. Okay. Anyway. See that? I am a good husband, right? You didn't know that. You didn't know that. Anyway. I knew that she would have gotten here without having her coffee this morning. That was the consideration. So let us continue then. That was a paid advertisement. I would have considered that perhaps that the divine ability of man to speak, which really distinguishes us from other parts of creation, and therefore this misuse of speech is the mi'ilah. The mi'ilah itself is I use my speech to steal something. I use my speech to take something. As I said, I would have been tempted to say that. And by the way, that may help us also in terms of the case with Moshe, that Moshe misuses the speech, and maybe that there is a concept of mi'ilah there as well. Although, if that's the case, then all misuses of speech should be called mi'ilah, and they're not. But that doesn't bother me terribly. In source number 3, the Netziv in the Hamik Davar tells us in the second line, Uma'ala ma'al b'Hashem pirish mi'ila hu shinoi rishut. He says, mi'ila, and he's using a very technical and very simple definition. He says, is the change of ownership. Shinoi rishut. Change of ownership is mi'ila. Causing something to change from one owner to the other. And if you just think about that for a moment, how many of those cases that we've seen today will that help us with? It will help us with the person who took something from the Mishkan. It will help us with the person who denied that somebody else has ownership over a particular thing. It will help us with the person who took someone else's spouse. Domain I want to use? Okay, especially with being married? Ownership is, but what would you, okay, Rishut is domain. Okay, that's better. And the case of Moshe taking what is God's, a Moshe and Aaron taking what's God. God said, do it like this, and they did it differently. See, that's also interesting where both of you were trying to go in terms of that any sin in itself is maybe taking something from God, but of course we're intrigued why specifically in the case of Moshe and Aaron it will be used. But as I said, that's not really our discussion today. And the other thing which is quite interesting is the B'nai Reuven and God building this other Mizbeach and that being called Me'ilah. So that's, you never get there on tours, right? You don't need to know this. So this is like totally a waste of time. So let's then continue. Rav Hirsch, who we just in case you want a hint when you go to Rav Hirsch, you go to Rav Hirsch whenever you're going to deal with symbolism, and he's very good there for it, and all things having to do with Mishkan, because there's symbolism involved. And the other thing is, he's very good when it comes to etymology, when it comes to words, understanding what words are. So that's when Rav Hirsch is going to be the go-to. So therefore, you'll note right away that a lot of Vayikra things, Rav Hirsch will be preferred in source number 4. He's going to tell us a couple of things. One of them is an idea that we've used numerous times, and now you'll see that he says it black and white. So let's start. But he's going to give us a real interesting definition of Mi'ilah as well, and that's what we want to get to. Kitam ol ma'al. Ma'al karov l'me'il. What's a me'il? It's an overcoat. Not just a coat. It's something which goes on top. So he says a ma'al is similar to a me'il. Again, it's something on top of. Uke'enze bagad karov l'beged. So just in terms... We like that. We've said this so many times, right? Someone's got to hear it the first time. By the way, this part is really, the Gemara really says this. It's really Rabbi Akiva who says this. He says it, and it's back on a pasuk in Mishpatim, in terms of the girl who father sold her as a servant, which was supposed to be for marriage. That same money was supposed to be the Kesef Kedushin. And then the person who was supposed to marry her decided not to marry her. Uvigdoba. Uvigdoba is the marriage didn't take place, which Rabbi Akiva understands as a bigida over here took place. Is no, the purpose of this was an arranged marriage. You can tell me what you think about arranged marriage, but arranged marriage, no matter what you'll say, well, maybe not. It's probably a little better than slavery, but he understood the whole purpose over here was essentially one of, you want to go back to economics, is you take a girl from a poor family and then you sell her, quote unquote, but you don't really sell her, you put her in a situation that she'll now be involved in a wealthy family, and then they have either the husband, either the person or his son can marry her, but if they don't, that's called a bigida. And the money which was given initially, that is the Kesef Kedushin. That is the money for the marriage took place, and at this point now she's part of this wealthy family. And that could change an economic status. Going back to, which by the way, is dependent on this machloket of Rabbi Akiva and others. Let me go back over here, that beged and bagad and beged, he says, are similar. Mitgala kan mahalach ha-machshavot ha-harmoni. This one I will explain the thoughts which are trying to create harmony. I hope you like that. Shiyatzaret shorshei ha-lashon ha-ivrit. Beged hu levush ha-adam. Levush is actually lovosh, that a person shouldn't be embarrassed. A beged is what you put on so that you should not be embarrassed. Right? That's levush. Bigida hi hafarat emunim be'inyanim anushiim klaliim. And a bigida is when somebody, what's hafarat emunim? Where somebody breaches a breach of trust. In terms of general, and again, I think we can use interpersonal issues. Anoshiim klaliim. Mi'il, and this is really the good point, hu levusha kohen gadol. A mi'il is used in the context, again, symbolism, always symbolism, is used within to describe the kohen gadol's clothing. Mi'ilahi hafarat emunim b'inyanei kedusha v'kehuna. And therefore, mi'ilah would be the appropriate term when there is a breach of trust regarding something which is holy or something having to do with the priesthood, with the kahuna. So therefore, he made a distinction between a bigida versus a mi'ila, although one would really have said that bigida is really where a person did an action, while generally I would have said mi'ila is generally more to do with finances, but of course you're going to come right back at me and say, hold it, that was interesting that I would have thought that when, you know, that relationship took place between that married woman and that man, that was a bigida, and it was, but it's also called a me'ilah, and that's really where it becomes interesting. And by being both, it means it's not just that there was the betrayal that took place, but there was also something from the world of holiness that was misappropriated. And therefore, mi'ilah is always going to indicate that there was something from the world of holiness that was misappropriated. And that's really what's going to be interesting about this definition. And as I said, that's what comes out of Rav Hirsch. Nira ifo, sheha boged osama ase beged. The person who's guilty of bigida, what word do we use for bigida? Already lost in words here. Bigida is betrayal. The person who does a betrayal, shabogeid ose ma'ase beged, v'hamoel ose ma'ase mi'il. Bigado shel adam hu siman la'ofyav, im he'iminu bi ka'adam, v'im mechazev ba'umunze, mitberesh eta rak bagad, great, or beged, greida. Klape chutz ani nir'e ka'adam, ach in kan ela ma'secha shel adam. So you can use this for Purim as well, is that sometimes a person presents themselves in a certain way, the way they dress, their clothing is going to be an indication of who they are, but he's using this more as a metaphor for inner behavior, and he's saying that sometimes a person presents themselves as a friend, or somebody who's trustworthy, or somebody who you can like, and then you realize that all this was a facade and it was a mask, and the mask is covering somebody who's really somebody who is not trustworthy whatsoever, and he's saying that is all having to do with beged, and therefore the mask that the person was wearing. And the clothing just was a mask. Instead, he was dressing up and not really revealing who they really were. V'chein ma'ol, hayu rishaim l'tepo imenu, let's see, sheruach ka'una tif'om b'kirbi. And regarding me'ilah, you would have thought that the spirit of a kohen beats within my heart, which I think it's a little bit of a higher level of trustworthiness. And again, somebody who you trust with money, as it were, there's a little bit of a higher level over here. V'chein hu omer, and therefore he moves over, eshet ishki tistei ishto umalabo ma'al, and therefore he feels that that's an appropriate application of this, and therefore within the case of the infidelity. Skipping, turning to the top of the next page, he tells us, lashon mi'ilah, the language of Mi'ila, mitzayenet et hafarat ha'imun shel isha klapei ba'ala v'shel Yisrael klapei Hashem. The language of Mi'ila therefore stands to talk about a breach of trust between a spouse and between Israel and God. U'mikan she'ein Mi'ila ela shinui. And you notice now after all of that work, he went back to the Netziv's definition, which is actually the Gemara's definition, and it's talking about shifting a domain, shinoi. Hitnahagot ha-mo'el, ha-mo'al, ha-mo'el, hi shone mizu shaya ra'uy l'tzafotla. What the person who's guilty of milah did was not one which would have been expected. V'chein b'yachas el kodshe Hashem, regarding taking from the Mishkan, ha-mo'el noheg bahem shelo k'ra'uy b'nigud l'mashiyat safui al pi yudam, in terms of what they were meant to be. So what you've realized is that what the Netziv said in one word, or one small half a phrase, it took the Rav Hirsch a beautiful, beautiful paragraph to explain this. And again, I'm not going to say that I can read everything he said right back into the Netziv. I'm not saying that at all. But if you were to ask him, do you disagree with the Netziv? He'd say, not at all. All that he did is, I wouldn't even use the word embellished, is that he deepened this, and he gave us far more depth in terms of what these words, what these concepts are. When I said that, I wasn't sure about the speech in terms of if that is the Me'ilah, so we'll just look for a moment at source number 6, the Dat Zaken Balei HaTosfot, talking about the very beginning of this parak, before we got to our issue of Me'ilah, the person who does not use their speech in terms of giving over the testimony that they have. That when it comes to somebody who makes a vow, which was the continuation of those first couple of verses, he says, therefore, the vow, even when done, when it's broken accidentally, is considered to be something which is deliberate. If you don't understand why, I'll explain in a moment. And so on. It's the middle of the pasuk. Lama yiktzof elokim, and so on. This is the continuation. So what did he just now say? You know, the world was, okay, let me put it like this. And I don't want to get into technicalities in terms of neder and shvuah and so on. The difference really is, for all that the brisker world, where people think they created the neder, they created, sorry, the cheftza versus the gavra, Is something an obligation on the individual? Is something an obligation on the thing, on the object? The difference in a neder and a shvua really is the difference between obligating an individual to do something or giving a status to an object. So, but when a person, something is parav, and now either a person took an obligation on themselves or they said that this particular object will be used in a particular way, before I opened my mouth, that thing was parav. And by opening my mouth, I've now created something. And therefore, if I accidentally broke what I created, it's not considered a normal shogeg. Oh, I forgot my vow, and therefore I broke it. No. You're guilty for having made the vow. So therefore, the accidental breaking of a vow, his point is, it's worse than other things. So again, I'm going back to this point of the misuse of speech is something which I have extreme responsibility for, even though you could have told me, no, that's only dealing with this case over here of the shvuah, although I'm tempted to stretch this a little bit over in terms of the mi'ilah, the use of the mi'ilah, which again, you used your words to claim or to either deny or that something is someone else's or to claim that it's yours, however you want to phrase that. And maybe there is some kind of profound misuse of your speech over here, which is analogous to the shvuah, which is why there is, again, this flow of ideas over here. And again, reminding ourselves that the whole concept is one of God gave us this ability to speak. We'll notice in, I believe, 7, 8, and 9, that they all noticed what we pointed out before in terms of the sequence of the verses, or within the verses, the sequence of the words. Source number 7, Rabbeinu Bachaye. V'chiper alav ha-kohen v'neslach lo min ha-shamayim, and so on. Nefesh, tetvav, let's look at. Nefesh ki tim'ol ma'al v'chata b'shkaga mikotshei Hashem. Hikdim kan b'parshat hektish mi'ilah l'chet. U'b'farshat pikadon v'dvurim shebein adam l'chaveiro hikdim chet l'mi'ilah. Okay, that is interesting. As I said, we noticed that right away, but we're just pointing out that others have noticed this as well. Hu shenemar nefesh ki techta u'ma'ala ma'al ba'ashem. Over here it also, this chamishito, and there chamishitav. V'tam ki b'kol zeh lashon mi'ilah hu mezid. Mi'ilah will always indicate something which was done on purpose. Something which you've done, you've deliberately taken something which isn't yours. Which is very interesting. Correct. L'kachik dim b'hekdesh hu michokei HaKadosh Baruch Hu mi'ila l'chet. V'shama davar shogeg. V'yokein amar l'shon chet shehu ha-shogeg. Avol b'chukei ha-briyut b'tiviyut shebein adam l'chavero hikdim chet l'mi'ila v'sham ha-davar zadon. V'lofich hizkir mi'ila ba'achrona. V'kol zeh mechazdei Hashem nipagorach ki hichmir yoter michukei ha-briyut Bein ze leze, yoter mima shechmir b'chukei yitbarach. So again, to make this clear, if this was not clear, when it came to mi'ilah from the Mishkan, that is b'shogeg. If you deliberately take it, there's a whole different punishment. Mi'ilah by the Mikdash is something which is only a case of shogeg. But his point is that when it comes to Bein Adam l'chavero, his point is that there's more severity in this, and if you want, we can read it again. Again, let's just look at the words so that we know what he's referring to. Back in source number one, in Tetvav it was Nefesh Kitum Al Ma'al Bichata Bishkaga. Okay, that was the case of the Mishkan. When it came to the taking things in Kaf Aleph be interpersonal, Nefesh Kitechta Umala Mal Bahashem. So there, the sin is mentioned earlier, even though Chet, by the way, is accidental. Is right. Chet is also accidental. Don't get fooled by this. So he's saying is, you took something from another person. He sees the fact that the chet was introduced at an earlier stage in the sentence, he sees that as being more severity in terms of interpersonal relations. If you look at the Alshech in source number 8, he sees this as one thing leads to another. Right, you're going to do this, but it's going to lead to that, and that's how he understands the milah. In kafalav kidama asher chatal lechaveru yavolam olma al b'ashem, that when you sin against your friend, it will lead you to be guilty of mi'ilah against God. V'zeo nefesh kitachta, v'lo l'ashem, Mizeh yavo l'mol ma'al ba'ashem. Upirish v'mar shahu ki v'kichesh ba'amito b'pikadon harechito l'chaviro. When a person denies that they have the collateral from the other person, at that moment they've sinned against their friend. Mizeh yavo l'mol ma'al ba'ashem, that will lead to mila against God. How so? Ki mizeh yavo yosif l'chto behena shahu ki yishba al sheker shu shivat ha'pikadon v'mol ma'al ba'ashem. That what's going to end up happening is that then you're going to take a vow, you'll take what's called a shvuah to pikadon, and you'll swear that that is not a pikadon, this is really yours. Again, what's really the problem over here? The problem is that in some legal systems, that possession is 9/10 of the law. In Judaism, possession is 10/10 of the law. Hamotzi michaveru olav araya. You want to take something from somebody else, bring proof that it's yours. Sitting in somebody else's house, go prove that it's yours. Over here, the person says, what are you talking about? I have to bring proof it's mine. That's my picadon. I gave that as collateral. So when it comes to picadon, the person is sitting in this guy's house. So therefore, the person has to take a vow. It's great. It's called Shavata picadon. He vows and he says, no. Swears by God's name that this is mine. And he does that. He gets to keep it. So what he's pointing out over here is that when you deny, you do mi'ilah. What's the mi'ilah over here? He says, no, there's two different stages. Go back again to Pasukaf Aleph and let's look at it one more time. Nefesh ki techata umalau ba'ashem. So that first phrase is going to describe what's going to happen afterwards. What happens? Techata. What was the sin? You denied that it was somebody else's. Then what's going to happen? You're going to do ma'ilah ba'ashem. What's the ma'ilah ba'ashem? When you use God's name to steal. I mean, again, just realize what just now happened. Meaning, why would I believe you just because you said it's not mine? Because now you took a vow and you used God's name to steal, that's the mi'ilah which is taking place over here. So, by the way, I just convinced all of you, correct? Yes? Because that was pretty good. Yes, so we like that. Good. It's every now and then it gets logical. I mean, I'm not even going to apologize for that. Well, that wasn't called me'ilah. That wasn't quite called me'ilah. By the way, dancing around in the background of all this, right. Dancing around in the background of all of this should be the Sarat HaDibrot as well, in terms of bearing false witness or maybe not bearing witness, and how are those related, and just something to think about. Let's go back again to the Al Sheikh. That when you're going to swear, v'hum al b'ashem, nosif alachet, ikvum amon chever, it's low. But on top of that, somebody else's money is now staying with you. Hine ki michet ish l'chaveru, yavo l'mo b'ashem, l'chein kashe yashuv b'tshuva, sha'akar shekafar v'nishba, hodah shenishba al sheker. Okay, lumat hadragat chet'o, tiyah hadragat tshuvato. And now he goes through the whole process over here, is you need to fix two different relationships. You're going to need to fix what you did in terms of God. You need to fix what you did in terms of the person. See, this is a little different from what you wanted to say. It's not just that a sin is that you've sinned against God as well. It's really that the sin against man will lead to the sin against God. But it's more than that. It's like, where was the mi'ilah over here? So explain to you where the mi'ilah is. And that's why the Al-Sheikh, I think over here, was very good. Let's move over now to the Kli Yakar. Kli Yakar, as I always remind you, is a darshan. These are the sermons that he gave. So there's going to be a little bit of Musar. He's going to say something which is going to be very similar to the Al Sheikh, but then he'll make one switch at the end. Nefesh ki techta malal ma'al ba'ashem, kanikdim achet lemi'ilah. As I said, that's something we noticed right away, and that's something that you have to notice because that is the problem really within the text. The fisha parshazu midver bekofer mamon chaviro va'achakach nishba l'sheker harei chata l'chaviro chet echad u'l'shamayim chato kaful. Again, the same process we saw in the Al Sheikh. You sinned once to the other person, and then you sinned against God by swearing falsely. Ki mitzad gzeila avara mitzvat Hashem. By the gzeila itself, you went against God's commandments. V'achar kach nishba l'shaker, and then you swore falsely. V'zeh she'amro, and that which it says, nefesh ki tichta, haynu ba'amito ma'ala ma'al ba'ashem shtey ma'ilot ka'amor. There's two different acts of mi'ilah, which we will describe again as misappropriation. U'loshon mi'ilah shaykh b'yoter klape ma'ala, k'mo shepirish Rashi, ein mi'ilah elishinui. Again, it's a switch of domain, if you will. Kitov Hashem lakov, v'hu lo k'gmo yado, hishiv lo, v'hu mishane v'einu ose k'mo she'asa lo. Which means, Mi'ilah, he's saying, is that God treated you a certain way, and then you've mistreated God, and that's really the Mi'ilah. You have mistreated God, but God gave you life, and God gave you certain things, and you've repaid God with your terrible behavior. He's calling that Mi'ilah. So one is going to be the result when he makes the vow, and the other is the actual action, and that's again why he's describing that the order of the verses will be different. And then he gets to his musar that he says at the end, and he admits that it's a remez. The second next paragraph. And again, now he's focusing on the pikadon. So we'll see who says mode ani in the morning. Ki b'chol laila adam mafkid rucho biyad HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'yaf al pi sh'neshama chayevet l'Kadosh Baruch Hu, ki al yedei avonot hi nefredet ad chova. Mikom makom HaKadosh Baruch Hu makev pikdono u'machzir lo ke'ein sh'natat lo. V'ze ha'mechachesh b'pikadon chavero, af al pi sh'ein chayav lo, lo k'gmul yado yishiv l'Kadosh Baruch Hu. U'lofi ze ha'nefesh ha'chotat b'pikadon chavero mo'il b'shlishi, t'hainu ba'ashem ha'shetziva lo l'achzir pikdono. That it's a third sin. What's the third sin? The third sin is, okay, you took it, and then you swore. But the other part is you didn't return it. I know you'll say, but you took it, but you didn't return. No, you had to return it. And he says, just realize that every single night you go to sleep, and every single morning God returns your soul. And your soul was a picadon that God took. Right? Where is he getting? What's the language that he's referring to? Whole thing. Right. So he says, please pay attention to the words that you say. He said, God is returning your soul every day, and you're not returning this thing that somebody, you know, was collateral. And you realize where he's going with that, and he very elegantly stops there and says, just something to think about, because God doesn't have to return your soul if you don't return things that don't belong to you. So over here, again, don't you love the Kli Yakar? Don't you realize he was great, right? People didn't walk out and have, you know, make kiddush during his speeches. Okay. Guaranteed. Someone's great, great, great grandfather. Okay. Source number 10. Or HaChaim HaKadosh. He says that this me'ilah that takes place in the interpersonal relations actually have a number of different elements to them. And he says, let's try to delineate and let's take a look at what they are. Nefesh ki techta, tzarich ladat, lama mar ki techta, ve'in lenu lefereish kan ki techta hi ha-hachasha, the denial, shri umar v'kachesh ba'amito. Right? Again, taking the first phrase of that verse in Kaf Aleph was referring to the second part of the phrase, and you just needed to link the parts up. I hope that was clear. Od amru me'al ba'ashem, mashalo amar b'kol ha-chata'ot. And so on. Let's go where it's underlined, and he says, this person is guilty of three different sins. One, nitilat devar she'enu shelo, hu anaf hagezel. You take something which isn't yours. That's stealing. Bet. Umalama al bashem pirish bashem kivyachol asama al. What is the misappropriation? What's the mila? Pirish l'shon shinoi. Kihu shafet al pi ma'asim, v'zika l'ze shi'ilo mamon, u'kishezeh ba'u gozlo, nimtza shogorim mi'ilah ba'Hashem, sheshina alav et adin, shelo amad biyado mima sheyegiu kfi mishpat Hashem, v'nimtza Hashem kivachol nechshad, shelo osa mishpat tzedek. That was unbelievable what he just now said. You're making faces. What he just now said was great. Let me tell you what he said. He said that God judges the world, and God is a fair judge. And every Rosh Hashanah, just for example, God judges and decides that this person will get this, and this person will get this, and this person will get this. And you go and you take something which isn't yours. So he says, just now you did two things. One is you took something which isn't yours. But two, you took something which belongs to him. I know that just now sounded like the same thing. He goes, it's not the same thing. Because God decided that he should have this thing. And therefore, what you're doing is you're breaking and you're rebelling against God's justice in this world by taking something which isn't yours, because now that person is not going to have what's his. So he's saying it's two points of theft. One is you have which isn't yours, but two, he doesn't have what's his, and that's going to cause this person to suffer, but it's more than that. God decided he should have this. Why in the world do you think you have the right to rebel against God's decision where God gave this to this other person? And that's what he's using the word me'ilah over here, because you are misappropriating something which is above, something which is in heaven. You're misappropriating and you are destroying God's justice. And then Gimel v'kichesh b'mito pirushim arshia et tzadik shetovei mimenu piktuno hu amar lo lo yudvim le'olam u'mashmo u'mi simo machish v'hu amru v'kichesh b'amito. He says what's going to happen now is that the innocent, and he's going to spell it out longer, but I'll just say what he says. He goes, what happens when you let's go back to the case of the pikadon. Somebody gives you the pikadon and you deny that it's theirs. They go and they make a whole big deal about it. Give this back to me. And you swear, no, it's mine. Now, the fact that you swore, what just now happened, let's say in the world of public opinion, everyone says, well, this guy never would have sworn God's name if he wasn't really true, so it must be this other guy was lying. So you know what else you just now did? You just now turned an innocent person and made them look guilty. Again, what you've done against what you've done by denying this is, again, you've gone against God's justice, but you've gone against God's justice in so many ways. Because, and his third element, you've taken an innocent person and you've made them look guilty. You've gone against God's justice, decided this person should have this thing, and you decided that you know better, and therefore the word me'ilah over here, he says, really is an appropriate term to use over here, because, and I guess this is really where we need to end, that any attempt on our part to make, you know, an absolute break between the world of interpersonal relations and the world of holy things, which, you know, the world of the Mishkan and things which are holy, is going to be an artificial division. That even misusing speech, I did me'ilah, because I should have used my words differently. When I make somebody innocent look guilty, look what I've done in terms of justice in this world. When I take something which God decided is his, so I've done something terrible in terms of God's justice. And he's saying that even the smallest actions, all of them have the spillover effect in terms of God's running this world, and therefore the me'ilah term being used in these other cases that we would not have suspected are absolutely correct, because me'ilah takes place in a direct way, and that's why the construction of the verses were different. Me'ilah takes place in a direct way, if you just want one final time to note that, and that's why, again, in Tetzvav, it's nefesh ki tamo ma'al, when you take something from the Mishkan, right away what you did, the first thing you did, you did me'ilah. But on the other hand, when it's the interpersonal, it's nefesh ki techta uma'al ba'al ma'ashem. A person did something which was wrong, and then the me'ilah will be the response. Which means the difference is, one is the me'ilah is the action, when you take it from the Mishkan, and the other me'ilah is the response. When you go down this path, even in the interpersonal relationships, you cause there to be me'ilah in this world, and therefore this is absolutely a part of Sefer Vayikra and part of the world of holiness.